News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7 on News.
The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, is to brief Cabinet today on the winter plan for the health service amid rising fears of what is being called a twindemic of COVID-19 and the flu in the coming months. Stephen Donnelly is to announce a total spend of $168 million. That's according to some reports this morning. It's supposed to speed up the recruitment of staff, create more capacity in community care, and there's lots more as well. Now, to talk about this, I'm joined by Dr. Ilona Duffy, GP in Monaghan Town, and by Professor Sam McConkie, infectious disease specialist with the RCSI University of Medicine and Health Sciences. Good morning and welcome to you both. We'll start with you, Sam. What do you make of the bones of this report? Now, I have to point out, I have it in front of me. It's version or draft V3.0. So I'm not sure whether it's the final draft, but it's almost indecipherable for a layman like myself.
So, Pat, I'm delighted that there is a what I would call a political response to this issue, because I think many of us are very worried that the hospital system and the care system in Ireland in November, December, January, February coming up ahead of us is going to be overcrowded, chaotic and busy. And a number of reasons that the last 3 months, July, August, September, have been much more busy than usual in our emergency rooms, and our admission numbers are showing that. Frail elderly people, not inappropriate, quite appropriately coming to the ED, getting care, getting admitted, and in many cases getting sorted out and treated and eventually getting discharged home. So it's not inappropriate work, it's work that's appropriate. But the demand and the need for healthcare, particularly for frail elderly, perhaps with mobility issues, with maybe underlying dementia, perhaps living alone, who then get an acute illness like a urinary infection, pneumonia, they need to go into hospital and get life-saving treatment for that. And then it takes several weeks for them to get better. We're just seeing more numbers. As one of the interns who just finished the three-month shift with me Friday said to me, is it always like this? I mean, is it always this busy? And I said, no, I'm sorry, it'll get worse in January, in December, January, February, because we will be hit with flu and all the other respiratory viruses. Mm. Historic, there's a seasonality that hospital admissions go up in that winter time.
Sam, why do you think this is so? I mean, if these are kind of the normal infections, but you're seeing more of them, it can't be catch up on the COVID lapses, because obviously people with other conditions might have stayed away from ED for fear of infection and they just carried on. But those kind of infections you're talking about, respiratory infections, what might the reason be? I mean, did isolation have anything to do with it and people's immune systems just didn't get challenged enough?
Well, isolation helped to avoid those folk getting so sick. We know there was much less flu for the couple of years that we were in social isolation. But I think underlying a lot of it is that we're an ageing population. And of course, there's a good side to that, Pat. We are ageing. And that means then there's a bigger proportion of us who are older, who have mobility issues, who have multiple chronic diseases, and who are what we would call frail elderly, maybe with brain not quite as organised and sharp and sparky as it was when we were young. So there's a larger proportion of the Irish population in that situation. We're just an ageing population. And we need to, over 5-10 years, adjust our health service to deal with that, a larger proportion of people who are elderly and dependent with multiple comorbidities and much more vulnerable to it's not only infectious disease, even though I'm obviously an infectious disease doctor, but even falls and broken hips in the elderly are common, and many other confusion in the elderly. There's many other non-infectious issues as well. So I think we need to really recognise that, not just in terms of our long-term pension planning that we're ageing, but in terms of our health sector. And my view is, we've learned in COVID, we need more single rooms. We need ensuite rooms, rather than having these six-bedded rooms where everyone's coughing on each other. That's no longer acceptable. You don't go to a youth hostel and stay with six other people and share a kitchen and bathroom anymore, even though many of us did that in our youth. We're now in a situation where people expect, for their own dignity and privacy, single rooms. And similarly, it's good for infection control, for influenza and for COVID, not to be getting those things when you're in hospital.
Now, the HSE will point out the number of extra beds that have been produced, but also the number of extra beds that are in the pipeline and should emerge. Now, the problem with extra beds is also extra staffing, and they talk about initiatives to improve the recruitment of people. All of that takes time, and this is mid-October, and we're talking about the winter initiatives. Winter is almost upon us.
I think that's very, very welcome, the expansion hospital beds. I think also helping with the in the last 2 years, discharge planning and what I would call home care packages and temporary supports for activity of daily living and for care needs for people who are sort of medically fit to go home but still need help with shopping and washing and transfers and toileting. Many folk don't have the power to do that themselves, don't live with anyone or a family members who could do it, and need support with those activities of daily living that, you know, you absolutely need to live at home. Many of us want to live at home and don't want to go into long-term care for lots of good reasons, but there's a need for support for those living at home to be scaled up, because that would help folk in the hospitals to get out the same day as they're medically fit for discharge. In some cases, it's palliative care. You know, people maybe, you know, only a short term to live, but they have these care needs. So I think there's a role for home support. Again, it's about staffing. You hit it spot on there, Pat, that getting staff, there's a shortage of staff in many sectors now, but that's also true for the home care services. And we've all really valued those people for the last 2 years through COVID. Very little COVID transmission for those who were at home getting home care packages. They've been very, very good at the PPE and the masks, and very little transmission, yeah, you know, from staff to patients or patients to staff for those folk who are being cared for at home. So that's a really good model that many of us have realised just how good it is through COVID, but it really needs staff and to be scaled up.
Now, I'll read out what the plan is. It aims to, one, implement bespoke integrated local action plans focused on improving unscheduled care performance and alleviating seasonal winter pressures. Two, deliver new national level initiatives based on best practice to enhance admission avoidance, patient flow and egress during the winter period. Continue the implementation of the outstanding initiatives funded through winter and NSP plans 2020-21 and 21-22, including the provision of additional acute and community capacity. And then the priorities, building capacity to deliver additional acute and community bed capacity and enhance staff capacity through the implementation of the Safer Staffing and Skill Mix framework and prioritisation of recruitment for existing funded posts to support Winter Plan 2022-23. Pathways of care, alternative pathways to care, vaccination, that's the easy one, because they have obviously the vaccination centres set up and they've got pharmacies and they've got GPs, so therefore all they have to do is trying to get the message across, and that one is doable. And then enhancing pandemic preparedness. Ilona, what do you make of those ambitions? Because that seems to be the bones of the plan.
Well, Pat, I suppose there are good things in this, and that they're talking about, I think, a doubling of the money that was spent on the winter supports last year. But I suppose, have we moved on much from last year? I mean, there was talk then about extra staffing, extra beds. Yes, we've seen some limited extra beds, but talk about hiring 51 new emergency consultants, ED consultants, is just farcical, really, when we can't fill the existing consultant posts that we have in the hospital setting. And consultants can't work on their own. Obviously, they need teams with them, not only of doctors, but of nurses and other supports such as physios, social workers. So while it's aspirational and it's to be welcomed, we've got to see the practicality of it come. Every winter we face the same problems. We face the backlog in general practice and we face the backlog in the A&E departments. And we know that the biggest problem in A&E departments is that there aren't enough hospital beds, because the people who are waiting in trolleys aren't people who can be triaged away and sent home. They're people who require hospital admission. But obviously we can help the A&E pressure by perhaps having pathways for people who don't need to be there. And that's, I suppose, what GPs do in the majority, and especially in the out-of-hours. But again, never at any stage are the out-of-hours services included in any of these winter plans, which is always a disappointment.
Well, they mention them on the page, whatever it is. It says, where do I see it now? It's something about, 500,000 calls to date in 2022 to the GP out-of-hours service. Now, it doesn't say how they were dealt with, whether they were useful, whether they were frustrated people. It's a lot of calls.
It's a lot of calls. And interestingly, we're now back to the pre-COVID levels of calls and pressure on the out-of-hours. So we're really back at this time in 2019, we're seeing higher call rates. Now, some of that, as Sam has already alluded to, is that we are seeing the rise in other viral illnesses. And definitely, I think everybody out there is aware that there are lots of viruses. Kids are bringing them home. They're spreading throughout the family. They're spreading in workplaces. So some of that is the minor coughs and snuffles, but some of it's a bit more, and nearly flu-like illnesses where people are feeling unwell and are home. Now, the majority of those shouldn't need hospital and shouldn't be presenting to hospital, but they are very definitely presenting to their GPs and very definitely presenting to the out-of-hours, who are facing the pressure of people perhaps not being able to access daytime services.
I'll give you an example, though, of the kind of stuff I'm finding in this plan. Now, you know, it's quite detailed and there's lots of acronyms and all sorts of things, PET, USE, all of this kind of thing. I'll give you one line. From a national perspective, the HSE board will, through its performance and delivery committee, seek assurance on the implementation of the winter plan from the chief executive officer and his executive management team. I mean, what kind of nonsense is that sentence? That the board is going to say to the HSE, you got this plan, we want your assurance on its implementation. What else would you presume from your executive?
Well, it's all a bit wordy, isn't it? And it doesn't get down to the practicalities of it. But look, there are good things happening. I mean, over the last year, we have seen a rise in the CITs, community intervention teams. So what are these? These are kind of teams that will go out into people's home and provide them with treatment and care. That some of that might be dressings, but some of that also might be putting them up on a drip to give them antibiotics. So for something like cellulitis, an infection in the skin and the leg, where somebody would normally have been admitted, they can be treated at home. We also have frailty teams where perhaps an elderly person has been admitted to hospital, and as part of their discharge, they'll be followed up by a team who come out and, you know, maybe occupational therapist or physiotherapist to kind of ensure that they're building up properly at home. And again, if we can add to those teams and be able to allow people to get home earlier and remain at home, that's also going to help. But, you know, that takes planning, it takes staff, and it's going to take time.
As we GPs prepare for this twindemic, does Pat think it's a wise move to add 430,000 patients, i.e. 1.5 million appointments, to the system that already has too few GPs? Nurse, the gatekeeper, is being forced to open the gate to A&E and to waiting lists. What do you think, Lana?
Well, I think it's a complete joke handing out medical cards like that on a system that's already overloaded and unable to deal with the workload it has. And, you know, it was simply something for everybody in the audience. That's what it feels like when already the HSE and the government are aware of the pressures where people can't register with a GP. So many of those who are going to be entitled to the medical card won't be able to find a GP to have a medical card with. So I think, you know, they have to plan and they have to think, but sometimes they just react and perhaps are responding to political pressure rather than medical pressure.
All right, we will leave it there. Thank you very much, Dr. Ilona Duffy, GP in Monaghan, and before that, Professor Sam McConkie, infectious disease specialist with the RCSI University of Medicine and Health Sciences.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.